Today's daf is Tamid Daf Lamed. We're going to start at the bottom of Kaf Tet Amud Bet. Today I'm going to show a lot of pictures, so I recommend if anyone can find pictures of the Beit HaMikdash on the map, it'll be very helpful. As I said, I'm using this book called the Encyclopedia Carta. So there's a lot of good pictures in there. Okay, before we get to the pictures, let's just continue on. I'll show you the pictures as we get to them. If you remember, we were talking about the eight seams. So first of all, I neglected to mention yesterday, there's this mitzvah to bring, or at least according to many, to bring two new logs every single day. So that's partly what we're talking about here. So remember, we move away the meat that was left burning. We take away the ashes, move them. Then they would set up the trees, the logs. And then we had a whole discussion about which, and there was the Maracha Rishonah and the Maracha Shniah, right, the big one that's meant for the Korbanot, and then the little one, which we said was right opposite the Hechal. Remember the entrance to the Hechal? On the, right, that would be on the northwestern side, facing the Hechal. That's where they put the Maracha Ktana, because they wanted to go right from there to bring the fire from there into the Hechal where, for the Mizbach HaKtoret, the Mizbach HaZahav. Okay, so then we had a whole discussion which types of trees could they use, and we said they couldn't use figs, and I'm sorry, they couldn't use olives and grapevines, because olive trees, grapevines, because that would be a destruction of Eretz Israel, according to one of the opinions. And then we said, well, then why did they allow, right, why did they, or that was actually the opinion, why we couldn't use, right, I think, were there two opinions? Right, no, there were two opinions, either because they were intertwined, right, and they were harder to burn, or because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And then according to the one who says Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, we have another problem, because there's this other source which seems to say there's a machloket regarding a bunch of trees, among them the Dekel tree. And if the Dekel tree is problematic, how could we say that's not also Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? And then we said, well, if you have a question on that, everyone agrees that fig trees are okay. And if fig trees are okay, well, fig trees also have fruits, and again, these are all the fruits that Israel is praised for. So if we let them cut them all down, Israel will no longer have dates, and they'll no longer have figs, and how are we going to resolve this? So how can we say it's Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? So the answer in the end, no. Te'anim, it must be, we're talking about Te'anim and Dekel that have no fruits on them. So now the whole question is there such a thing as a fig tree that doesn't have fruits? So that's where we're starting today. Two lines from the bottom. Is there really such a thing? The answer in, yeah, in fact there is. Kid Rechava, as Rechava says, if you want to create trees like this, and we're going to see why you would want to do such a thing, you take branches from a white fig tree. The white figs are not considered the best figs. And you should sand it down with a rope made from a date tree, a palm tree, basically. Disarich ale bizra. Then you basically, by sanding it down, you're getting rid of all the seeds inside that are from where the fruits grow from. Vikavre, and then you bury it, which is a strange lashon, because it should be you plant it, not bury it. But you bury it, hecha demasik yamasirton, dafka, where the water brings up all the sediment. Okay, some people call it, they say it's like a sandbar. And that's where you plant it. Kora avda pere lo avda. Okay, so what's created from such a tree is very thick branches, but no fruits. And they're so thick, and this is now why they become the recommended tree to use for these logs for the Beit HaMikdash for burning, because tlat brechei minayu lo machazka lehu gamla, three branches from it would not be held up by, would not, if you tried to cross a bridge carrying them, they're so heavy, three branches from here, this may be again is some exaggeration, but the bridge would fall apart. Okay, it can't support three of these branches. That's how heavy these were, and that's why they use them for the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, continuing in the Mishnah, Sidera Tamaracha Gdola. If you remember, we talked about, we said it was very hard to understand what they were talking about. It said on the Maracha Gdola, Chazita Mizracha, had this opening on the eastern side. Still unclear exactly what this opening is, but now they're going to talk about what's the purpose of this opening. It could be just it's a bigger space than the other area. You know, remember, we already talked about that they spaced out the logs. Why they spaced out the logs? In order to put the elita, remember the kindling chips, in between. So now the question is, why was there this bigger space on the eastern side? So there's a machlok, my time, Rav Huna v'Rav Chista. Okay, there's a machlok between them. We don't know who says what. Chad amar kedei shetehe aruach min hashevet ba. You want to allow the wind to get in. And when you go, when you make a fire ala esh, what do? You fan the coals. So they wanted the wind to be able to get in order to create a better fire. V'chad amar kedei shiu metzitin et ha'elita misham. Ah, the same as what we said before, the space in between all of them is the same reason why we leave this big space, because they would put the chips in there and that would help ignite the fire. So then they say, well, that makes no sense. Meitive, that is contradicted by our Mishnah, because it says, Reva chaya ben hagzirin, shayu mitzitin et ha'elita misham. They would dafka put it between all of them. So it doesn't make sense to say they had a big space on the Mizrach side, on the eastern side, and they also had space between all of them to kindle, and that's why would you need both? So what do they answer? Amar lecha, one can answer against that question, mikomo mikamot avde. They actually, you needed a big space to start the kindling, and that was on the eastern side, and then you also put kindling chips all over, right, in between all the others to keep the fire going. Hadron alach ru'u echav, and now we're moving on to the third parak. Okay, that parak was all Mishnah. Okay, and now this. Oh no, that wasn't. No, that parak was Gemara. Sorry, that parak was Gemara. This parak is right. This parak, I believe, is all Mishnah. Yeah. Today we're going to be just Mishnayot. Okay, Amar Lahem Hamimuneh. So remember, we have this guy who's in charge. Now, where do we leave? Where do we leave off in the Mishnah? We were. Everybody comes to Lishkat Gazit, and they're ready for the pious, the lottery to see who gets what job. Now we're going to learn what are all the jobs that they're sort of whatever auctioning. I don't know what the word is, lottering off. Okay, I'm sure there's no words. I'm just sort of making it up. But now the question is, what are they doing the pious for? So Amar lehem hamemuneh, bo vafisu. Okay, everybody, come be part of the lottery. Okay, here are the things. There's 13. Mi hashochet, who's going to slaughter the korban tamid? Mi hazorek, who's going to sprinkle the blood of the korban tamid? Mi midashem mizbeach pnimi. Okay, now they have to go clean out the ktoret mizbeach, the altar where they did the ktoret from yesterday's stuff. Mi midashen et menorah. We have to clean out also from the menorah. Remember, all that stuff goes to the same place where they put the trumat hadeshen, in that corner next to the mizbeach, next to the outer altar. Mi ma'ale evarim lakevesh. Now this is going to split into many jobs, okay? If you remember, the Kohanim would bring the body parts up the ramp to get to the Mizbeach, all the parts that need to be burned in the Mizbeach. Remember, the Korban Tamid was a Korban Ola, so the entire thing got offered up. So here are the different parts that they had to bring. Harosh, right? This is a good way of giving the Kohanim many jobs, right? To kind of give everybody a job. So somebody brought the Rosh, the head, the Haregel Shel Yamin, the right back hind leg, the shtei hayadayim, the two hands, which really means the two forelegs, ha'oketz, the tail, ha'regel shel small. Okay, this is obviously the order, otherwise you would have put two of the raglayim together, but obviously they did this in this order. Then the left hind leg, ha'chazeh, the chest, ha'gera, the cud, that's like the neck part where you choose its cud, ushtei tfanot, to the inner, the stomachs and the two sides of the body, I guess, or the stomach and the ribs. Hakirbaim, the innards. Okay, now we're done with the body parts. Those are all the body parts that got brought up in parts. Now, with the korban also, we had nisachim. Remember, they're the libations. So we have the solet, that means the mincha offering that went along with the korban. The chavitin, which is the mincha offering of the Kohen Gadol. Remember, we had them making, already preparing those chavitin for the Kohen Gadol. V'hayayin, and the yayin nesech, right, the wine libations. Okay, so those are all the jobs. Hafisu, so now, right, they do the pais. Zacha misha zacha. Okay, so whoever won, won. Now, this is a little strange. It sounds like one person won. Right? Like, in other words, it sounds like there was one pais. So there was, in fact, one pais. And what's interesting is he won, and then the person next to him gets the next job. Right, and it's the first one gets the shrita. Then the next one gets the next job, and the next one gets the next, and they basically go, so whoever won, from there it's determined who everybody else is, who everyone else who gets what job. Okay, it goes in order.
Was it one pious, and then...
Well, remember, they all put out their fingers. Right. They put out their fingers, they counted. got on you, okay, you, and then the person next to you gets, and then the person next to you, and then the jobs are all determined based on you.
Wow.
Okay? So if you won, then Ani would be next, and then Naomi, and then Ruth. That's how it would go. It would go like that.
Okay.
I didn't see if it said which direction. Obviously, that would be important. I would guess it goes to the right of you. Or maybe I just missed that. I wasn't paying attention. But I assume there was an order. So, you know, it sounds like a game, right? Whoever, right? It's just like when you play a game. You figure out, you know, you roll a die who goes first, and then whoever there goes first. Everything else is determined based on them. It makes a lot of sense.
It's to his right.
Oh, to his right. Okay, I figured everything is always to the right, so it made sense that it would be to the right. Okay, now all the jobs are given out. What's left? Well, now we have to decide, can we start doing the avoda? Remember, this was early in the morning, but before, you know, there's different times where that are critical. There's zricha, sunrise, which is that's what we call netzachama. But in halacha, there's also a time called Amud HaShachar, which is when the sun starts to rise. It's usually, I think, 72 minutes before Netzach HaMah. Sort of probably depends. But it's when it starts to get light out. Now, generally, we don't like to do things at Amud HaShachar because we're concerned that it might not actually be morning. So here, they had a, because they were Kohanim, and Kohanim were always Rizim, and they're careful, and there was less of a concern, so they allowed them to start earlier. But they had to check to make sure it was really light. In fact, there's a Mishnah in Yomo that talks about one time they messed up and they thought it was morning and they slaughtered the tamid and then they had to burn the whole thing because they messed it up. So they had to be very careful. So here we're going to see how they were careful. There's a bunch of different ways to read these next lines, so I'll give you a few options. Amar lahen. So then he says, Tzu re'u migiyas man ha-shchita. Go out now and look outside and see if the time for shchita has come. Right, they didn't have phones that told you, okay, when is sunrise and what all the times are, right? They couldn't calculate, right? The best way to do it is look outside. So, imigia, if the sun already started rising, haro'ema omer barkai. Okay, he would say, barkai milashon hivrik, it's starting to shine, the sun is starting to shine. Okay, and that was his call to everybody to say, okay, we can start our jobs.
Would they go out to Harzei team? Because I'm just thinking
I think they just looked
just
out.
Okay.
So we'll see, right? Which direction did they look out exactly?
You'd want them to look east.
Right. So, right. They looked east to see Meir HaMizrach. That's what they were looking to see. And then we're going to see that they looked out toward Chevron. We're going to see in a minute. Okay? So now...
Yeah.
What?
It's south.
Right. Right. So it's interesting. So then, let's see. So they say... Right now it sounds like... We can read this in two ways. Either that's one opinion, and now we're going to see a second opinion. Okay? Because here, so Machi ben Shmuel Omer, He'ir p'nei kol ha-mizrach ad shehu b'chevron. So Machi ben Shmuel says, now it's a little bit weird how this works out. Machi ben Shmuel was living in the time of the Mikdash. So it could be that the Mishnah is telling us he would then, okay, after, first stage was they would ask, someone would see, and they'd say, ah, the sun is starting to rise. So then Machi ben Shmuel would come. That's a bit weird that the Mishnah would be telling us like this, but again, it's a descriptive Mishnah, so it's possible. Then Machi ben Shmuel would say, hey, Ir p'nei kol ha-mizrach ad shehu b'chevron. Did it get all the way to Chevron? Did the sun rise that far? V'hu omer hen. And then, Amar lem tzuvi v'yu talem ilishkat ha-tleim. So if that was the case, that it was light all the way to Chevron, then they'd say, okay, let's get started. That's one way of reading this. A second way of reading it is, Machi ben Shmuel is disagreeing with Tana Kama. Tana Kama says they just look to see is the sun starting to rise. And Machi ben Shmuel says, no, 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 they had to say, they had to check all the way to Chevron. And that was a different way, and that not that he was the one who said it, but this was his opinion about how things went. Okay? Tov. So now, if in fact the sun has risen all the way to Chevron, or potentially maybe Tana Kama, it was just enough to say the sun was starting to rise, then... So now go to Lishkat HaTleim. You remember where that is? That's in the Beit HaMoked. The Beit HaMoked have four Lishakot we're going to learn in a minute. One of them was the Lishkat HaTleim. You can see it on your map. Remember, the Lishkat HaTleim is on the northwestern side of, or sort of in the center area, right? Opposite the entrance to the Heichal, on the north side. So now, in that, right, it's the Beit HaMoked. So, now they say that's where they kept the sheep. So go get a talem ilishkat ha-tla'im, or is that actually a lamb? Is it a lamb? Or I think al-tale is usually translated as a lamb. Right. So take the lamb from the lishkat ha-tla'im. Now they tell us, okay, they say it's on the northwestern side. Okay, we're going to see these have different names in other places, but right now this is what we're calling them. Okay, what's Lishkata Chotamot before we go on? So Lishkata Chotamot was a place, okay, there's a nice picture in this book about the Lishkata Chotamot. Okay, you can see it's the top picture here. Okay, so now, it's where people would go in, and they would pay money. I was thinking it's like, sometimes there was this falafel store, I see now it closed, but on Chuzah, where you would go, and you would pay your money, this happens in lots of places, and then you take your receipt with you, and you give it to the guy who's making the falafel, right? And he would see your receipt, and he'd say, ah, this is what you ordered, I'm going to give you the following, okay? So now, if that's what they would do in Lishkata Chotamot. Everybody who brought korbanot brought nisachim with the korbanot, or depending on which korban. But they would go there and pay for the nisachim. Now, remember, different animals had different types of nisachim. The amounts was different of how many nisachim you'd have to bring, depending on which animal you brought. So, right, shloshasun laparush, nesarun la'ayil, right, we say it in our tefillot all the time in Musaf. So now, they would go pay based on what they need to pay, and then they would take a chotemet, they would get like a stamp, you know, a stamp something. Then they would take that, and they would go show the Kohen and say, okay, please prepare me nisachim according to these amounts I paid for it. Okay, that's Lishkata Chotamot. Right, the whole thing, if you remember from Shkalim, I don't remember back then, but from Shkalim, it was a whole business thing going on there, right? It was like a store. Okay, so now, that was the Lishkata Chotamot. Echat Lishkat Beit HaMoked, that was where they had a fire going so the Kohanim could warm up because it was cold, and they had to walk barefoot on the floor, and the floor was cold, and so they would warm up there. Ve'echat Lishkat Shosim Ba'lechem HaPanim, and one where they would prepare the Lechem HaPanim. Okay, now, next Lishka. Okay, here's the next picture. Nichnesu L'Lishkat. Okay, so after they get the Taleh, then they go to Lishkat HaKelim. Here's a picture of Lishkat HaKelim. Okay, it's a huge room full of all different kelim, okay? Different utensils. So they go into Lishkat HaKelim. Hotziu misham, guess how many? Tish'im u'shlosha klei kesef klei zahav. That's a lot of kelim. Okay, there's a bit of a discussion what exactly they need all the kelim for. But apparently that was how many they needed for the Korban HaTamid. Just to bring the Korban HaTamid, they need 93 kelim. You can imagine all the kohanim that were on the Mishmar went in because they needed to carry a lot of kelim. Both silver and gold kelim. Remember, we learned this. They would give the lamb water to drink from a koshel zahav, from a golden cup. Whether that was a guzmar or not is a debate. Why did they give him water to drink? So it seems that the water was either to make it easier to flay the hide, or to make it less likely for the animal to become a trefa while you're doing the shechita. Somehow that would help. Even though he was already checked from the night before, now there's a big debate, they would basically check the lambs about 4 days before, and then, you know, they kind of keep them in this area and make sure that, what are they checking them for? For blemishes, because you can't sacrifice if it has a blemish. So now there's a debate about whether they actually check the lambs every single morning and night, and maybe that's why it means it was already checked for Miba Erev. So it could be Miba Erev just means we've already checked it before, a few days ago. Still, Mivakalino tola or avukot, we still check with the light of torches. Why torches? In the sunrise? Well, even at Amud HaShachar, it's not too light inside, so therefore they needed these avukot, and they would check again to make sure there were no blemishes. Okay, now you get to the next people. So it sounds like they haven't yet slaughtered it, and yet we now get to, right, we're talking about a few things that are happening simultaneously, because there's a lot of kohanim, there's a lot of jobs. So the one who won the pious, the two people who won the pious for cleaning the inner mizbeach and cleaning the menorah, hayu makdimin, okay, they would go first, arba kelim biyadam. Okay, they have four kelim in their hands. These are the four kelim that they took. Hateni, sounds like what? A tene, right? A type of basket. Hakuz, which is a jug. Okay, what's the difference, right? A basket is a wider opening. A kuz is a very narrow opening. Tene is for solid matters, and kuz is obviously for liquids. Ushne maftechot. Okay, and they took two keys. these keys, what are they going to have to do now? The person who shochet the tamid doesn't need to go into the heichal, but these people need to get into the heichal. And even though we saw before they opened the azara, but the heichal is still locked. Okay, they also had a lock on the azara, on the heichal. In fact, there were two gates. You can look at the map here. You can see you walk into the ulam. Right, there's steps going into the ulam. Then you get the ulam was kind of that entrance area into the heichal. Then there's two gates there. You see, there's these two yellow lines on the map. Two gates to get into the heichal. Okay, so now we're going to learn about how they opened the door. Soon we'll get to that, but first we're going to have a description about what this teni and kuz were. Hateni domele tirkav shel zahav, machzik kabayim b'chetzi. Okay, tirkav, by the way, there's a good note trikon about it. Tre kav. What does that mean? It's two kavim and another kav. A tirkav was a measuring cup that held three kav of... right, volume of three kav. It was a measuring cup, basically. So the teni is like a tirkav, except instead of holding three kav, it was machzik kabayim v'chetzi. It had 1.5 kav. In other words, it was similar to it in terms of shape, but obviously size, it wasn't the same. It was half the size. Hakuz domel l'kiton gadol shel zahav. Okay, and a kuz, a jug, is similar to a jug of, as they're telling you, I already described to it, a kuz is here, they're telling you. In case you didn't know, it's like a kiton of zahav, like a flask of gold. Ushte maftechot. Now, how did these maftechot work? Echad shehu yored ba'amat ha-shechi, ve'echad shehu poteach kevan. Okay, what does this mean? Well, if you look in this picture, okay, in order to open the first door, it was a kind of strange structure. It wasn't like there was a lock on the door. You had to put your hand inside this little hole until you got to the Beit HaShechi, until your armpit. The Kohen would put his arm all the way in through the hole to the armpit, and from there reach in. In other words, I think it opened only from the inside. So we had to reach up and in and unlock the door. Okay, it was a weird way. Okay, obviously the hole wasn't big enough for him to crawl in. You can see. So he would put, right, it's a little weird they created a door that only opened from the inside, but that's what he would do. He would put his arm in, open, unlock it from the inside, and then it would open. And the second one, it would just then open. It was very easy to open. Okay, that wasn't, you didn't have to go in some backhanded way. Okay, that's what we just read, right? So, echad shu put yored ba'amat ha-shechi, that means until his armpit, ve'echad shu poteach kevan. Okay, that it just opens up normally. Okay, so now we're going to have the description. It kind of described it, but now it's going to describe it more in detail, what we just said. Balo lepishpesh ha-tzfoni, okay, there was a little opening on the northern side. Shnei pishpishin ayulo l'shara gadol, l'chapet zafon v'chapet aron. There were these two whole areas. So there were these two entrance areas or ways you could get in, one on the northern side, one on the southern side of the gate, like this gate that leads to the Echal. Shebedarom lo nechnas bo adam. Okay, on the southern side, no one would ever go in there. Alavu mefurash al yedei Yechezkel. That's described by Yechezkel sheneemar. Vayomer Hashem elai, achshar hazeh sagor yehiye, lo yiftach v'ish al yavobo. Ki Hashem elokei Yisrael balo, v'yas sagor. Okay, so that, right, that one always stays shut, the southern one, but the northern door would open. Natal et hamafteach upatach et hapishpesh v'nechnas lahata, u'me'ata lehechal. Okay, so then he would open it with the key, right? So now he would get in, as we said, with his sticking his arm in, open it from the outside. He would open it up, and he would get into this ta, like a little receptacle. Umeata lahechal. Okay, and then from there, he would open the door to the hechal, as we said. You can see it there. In between, there was like a ta, that little area. Ad shmagia l'shara gadol, then he gets to the shara gadol. Higia l'shara gadol, hevir taneger v'tapotachot upatcho. When he gets to the big shara, then already he can directly open the key, right? That's the neger, is the bolt, and the potachot, right? The openings, and he basically opens the door with the key. Lo haya shochet, ha-shochet, ad sheshomea shara gadol sheniftach. Okay, so now, the shochet is standing outside the hechal area, right? He's not there. He's on the near in the Beit HaMitbachayim, which we're going to get to in a minute, which is opposite the Mizbeach. What does he do? He can't shecht until the hechal doors are open. Okay? There's like a whole timing thing going on here. He's not allowed to slaughter the tamid until the doors open. So now, how does he know? Well, he hears the doors opening. It's a very loud noise it makes. We're going to see in a minute. It makes such a loud noise that we're going to see the sound gets all the way to Jericho. Okay, that's how loud the sound was. Again, we probably have a lot of exaggeration going on here, but this is what they say. So he would hear the Shara Gadol Sheniftach, and then he'd know, now I can shecht. Miyiricho hayu shom'im kol Shara Gadol Sheniftach. Okay, from Yericho they could hear all the sound of this gate opening. That's how loud a sound it made. Yericho, now, once we're going to talk about Yericho hearing the sound of that, we're going to say, well, from Yericho they heard all sorts of sounds from the Beit HaMikdash. Yericho ayu shom'im kol magrefa. Okay, that was a musical instrument that they used. If you remember, we talked about all these musical instruments in Erchin. Most people take out the next words because it appears a little bit later in this source. Miyericho ayu shom'im kol ben arza mekish betzirtzal. Okay, that was one of the families that would make music. Miyericho ayu shom'im kol achalil. Okay, they would also hear the chalil. Miyericho ayu shom'im kol gvini karuz. He was the guy, if you remember, he would announce, okay, it's time to wake up, we got to get going. Okay, he's called the karuz, or gvini is his name, kol gvini karuz. Miyericho ayu shom'im kol ha'et sha'asa ben katim muchni lakior. Remember, we talked about that the other day. Those beams, those wooden beams in the pulley system that would bring up the kior, the sink. So he would, right, it's not exactly a sink, the water basin. You could, even that sound was so loud, not only to the Kohanim that were in the Beit HaMoked heard, but the Kohanim, right, even people in Jericho could hear that. Miyericho ayu shom'im kol hashir. They would hear the sound of the Levim singing. Miyericho ayu shom'im kol hashofar. If you remember, they would blow the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash every day. V'yeh shom'im af kolosh ha-kohen gadol b'sha'ashu maskir et Hashem b'yom ha-kippurim. Okay, when he would say the Shema Meforash, right, that's the, when we all would bow down, that's what we do in shul, right, when he's maskir the Shema Meforash, they could even hear that. Me, right, even without microphones. Miyericho ayu mirichim reach pitom haktoret. And from Yericho, they could smell the smell. It was such a strong smell. The incense burning, they could smell the incense all the way from Yericho. Okay, what's this trying to say? Right, it's trying to show how central, I think it's trying to show how central and how, you know, all these things going on. Part of the problem is all these things going on in the Mikdash went on in the Mikdash, and nobody really outside the Mikdash theoretically saw them, smelled them, heard them, right? In other words, theoretically, it was all going on inside. In the Ezra Kohanim, only Kohanim could go in, right? And yet what they're trying to say is everything had sound and smell and people could hear it for, you know, kilometers or miles away. So it's a way of kind of saying that. It's interesting, by the way. I was going to make a connection, but not, right? Because I was thinking, we started with saying, could they see the sun all the way out in Chevron? And we kind of end this stuff by saying, right, it's not just seeing things outside, it's that everyone's seeing things inside, right? It's kind of the opposite direction. Okay, so now another thing they said about this. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Degilai, Izim hayu la'ava ba'arei ha-michvar, v'hayu mit'atshot mireach pitum ha-ktoret. He had these izim and they would sneeze when they smelled the pitum ha-ktoret. Again, it's a way of saying the smell got so far, it's unclear exactly where these arei ha-michvar are, maybe somewhere on the way, like a little outside the Dead Sea area, and the izim, the goats would sneeze from the smell. Okay, again, a way of saying how far all this extended. Okay, continuing along now. Mi shezacha betamid, mishacho v'holech bebeit ha-mitbachayim. Umi shezachu be'evarin, hochin imo. Okay, so now, the person who gets to do the slaughtering, he would go take the animal and pull him to the Beit HaMitbachayim. That's the area where they did the slaughtering. And whoever is supposed to be carrying the body parts up to the Mizbeach also goes along with him. Beit HaMitbachayim, now we're going to see where it was. Hayalis Fonosho Mizbeach. Remember, the Mizbeach was either all the way, only on the Darom, or at least on the Darom into the Tzafon. Okay, in our map, it's basically in the Darom and a little bit into the Tzafon of this map. The Beit Mitbachayim is right past the Mizbeach, okay, right, not on the side where the ramp is. The ramp goes out to the northern, to the southern side. The Beit Mitbachayim is on the northern side. Ve'alav, okay, now we're going to learn what was in the Beit Mitbachayim. What they don't tell you, which is, I guess, obvious, so they don't say this, is you can see there were all these rings, okay? There are 24 rings, I think, here. Yeah, 24 rings, okay? The rings were to put the animal, right, put the neck of the animal underneath so they could slaughter them properly. But now we're going to learn that not only did they have these rings, but there were other things in the Beit Mitbachayim, and I'll pass around this picture, 41 in this book. Okay, you can see there are the rings on the floor, and then we're going to talk about these two things that are here, okay? So, which there's eight of them. Alav shmona amudim nanasim, mini pillars, Uriviim shel erez al gabehen, and they would put these wood, these squares of cedar wood on top of them, like a little block of cedar wood. Va'anklaot shel barzel hayu kovim b'hem, and they would put, you can see it right there, they put these wooden pegs into the wooden, okay, so we have a little stone,
metal,
a little, sorry, whatever, I said the wrong thing. Okay, we'll start again. We have a little stone pillar, like a mini, then almost like a tree stump. On top of that, we have, except made out of stone, on top of that, we have a wooden, which, by the way, you couldn't nail down to the, it just sat on it, because we already learned you can't plant any trees, any wood, in the Beit HaMikdash. So it must have just been placed, this wooden thing on top. And from there, they would hang these metal hooks, these iron hooks. V'gimel starin l'chol l'chavech ad shebehen. Sorry. V'gimel starin l'chol l'chavech. There were three sets of these, for each three sets of alankaot shel barzel. It's weird, because in the picture it says there's two pegs. Sounds like there's three pegs here. Shebehen tolin u'mafshitin. Okay, what would they do with these pegs? Well, they would hang the animal in order to flay the hide. They had to hang it on these pegs, because you have to make it, right, if it's lying down, it's not going to be easy to take off the hide. So they would hang it on these pegs. It's a little weird if the wooden thing wasn't somehow nailed down to the stone, how it didn't fall off, I'm not exactly sure.
Fit.
But I guess, maybe they fit it in somehow.
It's deep
enough. Okay, so then they had these little tables. So if you see, there's two things here. There's these wooden things, and then there's a little table of shayish, of marble, next to it. So there were these shulchanot next to them. The question is, what exactly these shulchanot were used for, these tables? Some people say it's so that you would put the head of the animal on the shulchan next to it. Some people say they would start taking off the hide on the table. Somehow the tables were kind of support for what they were trying to do. Okay? So now, that's the tables. Okay, so now we have, now they've described to you the Beit HaMikdash, the Shochet goes there to Shecht. And in the meanwhile, Misha Zachah B'disho Mizbeach HaPnimi Nichnas Menatal Tateni V'Hinicho Lefanav. So now he goes into the Heichal. Right, they already opened the door. Right, we're back to, we're kind of split screen. Okay, at the same time, they're going into the Echal. I think if I recall, I saw there was a bit of a debate about if you're supposed to be Shochet the Tamid after you clean or not. It doesn't really matter, or if the order's important or not. I think there's a debate about that. Who does what first? In the meantime, he goes inside. He takes the basket that he has, the Teni, v'nichol afanav, he puts it on the floor in front of him. Hayach chofen v'noten l'tocho, he takes a handful from the deshem, right, and puts it in the box. And then he finishes, right? He cleans, he keeps taking handfuls till he cleans it all up. Litocho, right? So he puts everything in there, into the basket. Now he leaves it there. It's not his job to take it out. Okay, that's someone else. You see how they really wanted to divide up so everyone had a turn. So he would leave it in there in the meantime. Also, the idea was that they wanted to take them out at the same time, both that and the menorah. So, and there was a, it seems, I think also there I saw that maybe there was a bit of a debate about this, but it seems that they did one after the other. You can't have two avodot going on necessarily at the same time. There's all different debates about all these issues, about the timing. Misha zachah b'dishun ha-menorah, so now we move on to the cleaning the menorah. Nichnas u'matza shtei nerot maravit. Okay, so now there's a debate how to read this. Mizrachit or maravit or mizrachit maravit. Okay, what it means is the two candles on the eastern side. It could be maravit means, meaning the one on the eastern side. Now, there's a whole debate. Did the menorah go north-south or east-west? This obviously assumes it went east-west, because if it goes north-south, there is no, right? If you remember, the one had to stay lit all the time, the Mizrahi. Then we said the second for the Mizrah, so the Maravid is the second one, the one Ma'arava from the Mizrah one. It's not the one all the way on the Ma'arav side, it's the one on the eastern side, the two on the eastern side. Now, this doesn't mean necessarily he always found them lit, but if he found them lit, what would he do? We're going to learn that they would do the cleaning in two stages, okay? The stage right now is only the first stage, where they're going to clean five out of the seven. The reason why five out of the seven, well, they want to do rov, and they want to at least leave over two, because you have to clean, they wanted to do hatavat ha-nerot, it's called hatavat ha-nerot, in two naglot. So one, you would, if to leave for the second one, you have to leave a minimum of two, because it's called hatavat ha-nerot. So they would leave two. So they would do five, leave over two, and they would leave over the two that were on the easternmost side. So now, and we're going to see only much later do they clean those other two. So if he found those two lit, then he would midashena tashar, he would basically clean out the other ones, umineachet elu dolkim bimkoman, and he would leave them lit for the meantime. Mitzaosha kavu, if he saw them already burnt out, midashnanu madlikomen adolkim, he would clean out. Now here it doesn't mean dishun, like real cleaning out. He would just take off a little bit of, and it's in order to light a candle, sometimes you have to take off some of the black ash on it. So he would clean off some of the ash at the top of the two easternmost ones. He would light them, because the whole idea is those will stay lit while there always has to be one lit. So if he wants to, if the other side, and let's say he gets back and one on the west side is lit, so he relights the two on the east, and then he cleans out the five on the west. Umadlikan min adolkin, so then he relights it from one of the ones that are still lit. Va'acharkach midashen etashar, like you said, and then he cleans out all the others. Ve'evan, last thing we're going to learn about today about the candles. Ve'evan aita lifnei menorah. There was stone on the floor in front of the menorah. Uba shalosh ma'alot. There were three stairs. Sha'ale kohen omed umetiv etanerot. Number one, those stairs were used, right? You always see the picture of the menorah. There's always these stairs leading up. Okay, you can find that in this book. So there were these three stairs leading up. The first thing, which was the obvious they would use the stairs for, was for the kohen getting up to the mizbeach was tall. The menorah was tall. So flip through and find the picture of the menorah, and then you'll see the steps. And the second thing they were for, umeiniach et akuz al ma'alah shnia v'yatza. The second use of it was he would leave on the middle stair. It's not so clear why on the middle stair. He would leave on the middle stair the stuff he cleaned out from the neighborhood and put it into, right, that flask he put it into. He would leave that on the second stair. And again, we're going to obviously see later that somebody would come and take them out and put them on the mizbeach, but we're not up to that yet. Hadron alach amar lahem amumuneh. We'll start tomorrow with the fourth parak.